The Survivor, Book 2 of the Alfred Saga by Paul Ahmond, read by the author. Chapter 1, 1813. Thomas Manning strode through the woods a couple of miles back from the bay, fighting a powerful despair swarming over him like the ever-present black flies. Baby son off with the tribe, well looked after, but still wife gone, and nothing ever could replace little Birch. All spring, ever since he had left his Mi'kmaq encampment up the Port Daniel River, he'd fought this battle against melancholy. But now, something drove it from his mind. The smell of smoke. Could it be a forest fire? No, probably some settler on the move. But who'd travel inland so far from any settlement? More likely a couple of the local natives passing through. Yes, having lunch, he dismissed the thought. And then, of course, relentlessly, the images haunting him for the last month took over, the first time he and Magwess, his wife, had revealed their love. He had been spending the winter back in the interior with her family, and she had called him out of their wigwam. He followed her on snowshoes to a nearby hill, and then she had said, "Thomas, look up." He had never seen such a display. The spectacular curtain of light wavered across the northern sky, streamers of red and purple, shimmering in a filmy curtain, surely hung by some impressive Mi'kmaq deity to dazzle them both. They stood as one, watching the light, dancing, it seemed, only for them. In that clear, icy night, he looked down into her dark eyes, alight with the pleasure and the reflection of the lights. His heart hammered as he heard her breathing grow deeper, quicker, as though she had been running. Then, at the same moment, they leaned close. Their lips met. That rush of blood which flooded his lungs and his heart leapt in him again as he walked the spring woods and drove him to shake his head angrily, repelling the image. "You're just torturing yourself," he complained over and over again. He walked on, looking for the patch of blueberries in a burned area well back by the brook. He also wanted to find cranberries left over from the winter, or shoots of squawberries, bearberries, or wintergreen, all of which he'd eaten with the Mi'kmaq. But most of all, he wanted to get Magwess out of his mind. "Focus on your search," he told himself. The smell of smoke intruded once again, and he stopped to test the air. Yes, indeed, there, much too close, to his right, a stack of black smoke. Nothing in his walks as a lad over the Derbyshire countryside had ever prepared him for this. Two summers ago, while working for the Robbins Company in Paspebiac, stogging a new hull with oakum, he had heard talk of these wildfires. Ahead of him, an explosion of accumulated gas blasted the spike of a charred trunk that twisted into the air, fell, and more flames broke off to continue on the rampage. A storm had passed in the night. The thunder had woken him in his cabin, and lightning had illuminated the bare interior. But this morning, the earth outside was hardly damp. The woods did need rain. This spring had been unusually dry. Traveling over a tinder of dead leaves and pine needles since dawn, Thomas had begged the Lord above to bring rain. He whirled and headed for the coast. Living among these Mi'kmaq had taught him how best to navigate these woods, but as he glanced back, he saw the fire was gaining on him. Soon he'd be caught. He should never have lost himself in a welter of morbid recollections. He looked up. Flames raced from treetop to treetop with the speed of a catastrophe. The roar reverberated through the vast woods. He'd be burned alive. "Get going," his brain yelled. But where? All at once it hit him. The brook. Yes, down in the hollow. But where was it from here? How close? Head back, quick, to the valley's lip. Dangerous, but how else to reach it? Behind, the fire charged through the trees, pouring flames upward. Smoke thickened and swirled, threatening to choke him. To his right, another spruce burst into flame. And another. The land sloped up. Did that mean his direction was wrong? But beyond that, it might drop into the hollow. He looked anxiously, left and right. Fire on both sides, galloping flames, leaping from tree to tree, circling the trunks, savaging the tops, roaring as it tore at flammable needles and cones that swirled upward in buoyant plumes before falling to set other spot fires. Ahead, another tree caught fire. Surrounded. Think. Check your choices. The brook was the only alternative. He saw the tufts of trees surging with crimson smoke, but below, yes, a way through. Should he risk it? Behind him, the blaze whipped up a whirl that flared into the sky. He'd stepped into an oven. He dashed below the burning tops with flaming limbs dropping all around him. A branch struck him on his shoulder. He slapped the embers away. Ash in sudden updraft scattered down to blind him. He blundered through scratchy branches, leapt deadfalls, got clear, and there, beyond, the woods dropped away. Frantic, he tore over the brow and down. Too steep. He tripped and fell, over and over, somersaulting, until he struck a tree trunk. Stunned, he tried to rise, the bloodthirsty fire chasing him, but he slumped back, ankle throbbing, shoulder wrenched. He lay still for a moment. "Get up," he commanded himself. Unsteadily, he rose to his feet and set off downward. But his ankle, twisted in this tumble, gave way. He resorted to pulling himself past trunks, his shoulder hurting. Finally, he reached the bottom, humped with dead trunks, fallen limbs, dead moss, dry ferns. A brook did run somewhere here, he knew that, but how far? Its gurgling would be drowned out by the raging firestorm. Downdrafts hauled smoke around him, making him cough. Even down here he could feel the heat intensify. His heart hammered and his mind swirled like the fire. Behind, the blaze raced along the brow of the hill. Any second it might drop down to cut off his progress. Find that brook fast. Knots of tangled bushes blocked his way. How could they flourish under these balm of Gilead, themselves survivors of another fire? Their heavy foliage topside was being devoured. He forced himself through more snarls of shrubbery to join a stampede of mice and voles, even a fox. Where was that wretched brook? He plunged into a thicket, but he'd lost his sense of direction. Was he actually going in a circle? His coughing intensified, draining his energy and slowing his pace. The smoke was settling down around him, stifling his breath. Above the flaming trees, thick clouds still darkened. Promise of rain? He prayed aloud for a cloudburst. Save me, he begged, scraping past barbed branches of spruce. Trees exploded, limbs splintered and snapped, taking him straight back to the gun deck of the Bellerophon, with its roar of cannon and cracks of musketry, as naval marines picked off sailors on their battle-ravaged decks. Once more he recalled exhorting his gun crew, fighting back the panic that immobilized lesser men. "Keep cool," the unspoken motto of every sailor in His Majesty's Navy. In the extremes of battle, think clearly, do your duty. He remembered Lord Nelson's signal, fluttering from the distant victory, translated by their signal midi astern. England expects every man to do his duty. How his gunnery mates had resented that. With the great Battle of Trafalgar approaching, what else would they do? What else had they been doing? Treat us like men, they clamored under their breath, wheeling out their giant cannons in readiness. What else would we do but our duty? So he made himself keep cool now, plunging toward the hoped-for brook. Still, the explosions reminded him of the great .32s on his gun deck as a pine beside him exploded. A gust of oxygen had struck another buildup of gases, and boom, the tree showered Thomas with flaming debris. Race for the brook. But which way? He glanced upward as flames attacked more bomb of Gilead, and suddenly he found no surface for his feet. Down he crashed into the brook. At last. But too shallow. Shocked by the icy water, stunned from striking the brook stones, he tried to lift himself but fell back into the running water. He choked, then shook off his confusion, rose shakily onto all fours. No. First roll over and soak your clothes, and then your long hair. Quickly he struggled up. Find a deeper pool. He ran on, his feet slipping on mossy stones and tripping. He pulled his shirt up over his head. The brook turned. Was it still too shallow? After another fall, he pulled himself out onto the bank and lurched forward. Among the crack of dry branches resembling musketry, he thought he heard shouts as if from his men exhorting him. Go, Thomas, save yourself. We're with you. His crew, his gunners. And go he went, leaping branches, dodging more dreadfalls with the fire chasing him. Then he saw a grizzled birch, a slant. Yes, he'd fished there. That was the pool. A limb fell just in front of him. He stopped. It ignited a thicket of dead brush. He dove back towards the brook. Just keep your footing, he prayed, slippering and slithering up the stream bed towards his pool. A muskrat scuttled straight back into the fire. No, he shouted. Wrong way. He stooped to save it. Panicked, it whirled and raced past. He straightened and kept going. His back burned, his feet and ankles pained, but he dropped once again into the icy brook, dousing his 6-foot frame, lean from 2 years surviving in the new world, burying his long hair and beard, which was already drying rapidly. The bushes around the brook caught fire. Now what? His flesh seared. He choked from the smoke. It tasted bitter and acrid. He dropped onto all fours, keeping close to the water. For some reason, the lower air let him breathe. His elbows and knees scraped along the rocky bottom. A blackened trunk athwart the brook stopped him. He tried squeezing beneath it. Some bark came loose, and he grabbed it, forcing himself under and past the ring of fire, splashed the last 10 feet, and then collapsed into the pool. On his back, completely submerged, he lifted his face to breathe. Too hot. He placed the bark over his face to shield it from the heat. But his fingers burned. Was the fire passing over? All at once, he couldn't breathe. No oxygen. Suffocating. He tried gulping air. Calm down, he told himself. Slow that beating heart. But he couldn't. He felt he was drowning. With a huge effort, he made himself resist the urge to leap up and gasp for air. Better suffocate in this icy water than die by burning. Torn by impossible choices, his mind flashed with visions of a native woman. Magwess, little Birch, his wife, dead and gone these last 2 months. She reached out her hand. Her touch calmed him as he felt himself fading. And then, as her vision drifted away, the fire seemed to pass over. A breath of air filled his lungs. The intense heat was lessening. Soon he lifted out his face. The fire had thundered on, passing over him in its wild rampage, and he heard the sound of thunder. More lightning? No, he reassured himself. Just rain. Rain at last.